My name is Martin Maudsley from the Talking Tent Project, and we are recording a series of conversations about the Dorset Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty, celebrating 60 years of the Dorset AOMB and all its varied landscapes, from the Jurassic coasts to the Iron Age hill forts and all the fields and farms and forests in between. So we're trying to record how people and place have interacted with the landscape of Dorset AOMB and the ways in which the future might unfold. We're going to go through a cycle of the seasons, looking at how things change in the natural world through the year, and talk about how the last year has gone and how we've grown a sense of deeper gratitude, I think, for having this amazing landscape at our feet. I'm in between where I live and where my friend David Dixon lives. We're out just by North Hill, and it's a lovely day. It's bright blue sky. There's a bit of breeze, isn't there, David? Down off the hill.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk to him. He's been working in countryside management and landscape projects a lot of his working life. But for me, he's a good walking friend. And over the year of lockdowns, we've found a bit of time where we can go out, explore some hidden bits. You've shown me some parts of Dorset that I didn't know.
Yeah.
A couple of bits.
Felt like we're doing a Christmas jigsaw, isn't
it? Yeah.
And like, you'd got half the pieces and I'd got the other half, and we're putting them together, which...
That's a good analogy.
It was quite enriching, wasn't it, to fill in that jigsaw of our landscape.
Exactly, the missing pieces. We've been finding the missing pieces.
That's the book.
It could be, the missing pieces of the landscape. Yeah. So the first question I wanted to ask you, which is very open-ended, we'll see where we go, is why do we walk, or more specifically, why do you walk?
Yeah, so I sort of see it as like a dynamic that we explored, didn't we, of walking and kind of mental health, and that relationship between walking and mental health. And then I think my bit was that we were throwing in nature and landscape, and like playing around with that kind of, are there like feedback loops between walking, mental health, in nature, seeing nature, being in a landscape that's interesting, you know? And so I think that all our walks, we were playing around with that, weren't we, that dynamic.
And I think the fact that we were doing it often meant that we got into a routine, so the last walk we still carried with us when we went on the next walk, and that added to, remember last time we saw this, and we're kind of noticing a bit more that happens.
Yeah.
And did you find that it was a good way of you, of just, you know, it's been a difficult year for everybody, did it help you to keep
I think reflecting on it, I kind of feel like I come from a family of walkers, people who, if there's a problem, you go out for a walk. If, you know, if you're struggling with things, you go for a long walk, you know. And I think what I've kind of learned from walking with you and the sort of lockdown thing is that that's great. You know, you can sort stuff out in your head and get yourself a direction through the physicality of walking. But actually, walking in a landscape which is interesting topographically, like we have here in West Dorset, it's like really interesting kind of folds and geologies. And then you throw in that kind of nature, and suddenly the whole thing is enhanced, you know. And I kind of enjoyed sort of, you know, those extra sets of eyes and ears, you know, your knowledge of butterflies and birds and plants kind of just like opened up a whole new sort of section that I really enjoyed.
And that opens up the thing that I'm interested in, which is that stories are the kind of connective tissue of landscape.
Absolutely.
Us sharing a walk, we were adding a story, because, you know, we've got different backstories, but also we're talking, so that automatically becomes stories.
Yeah, it's that the classic palimpsest, isn't it?
Yes, we like that word. So a palimpsest, a kind of a landscape that is then layered with a different pattern, and then another pattern,
and then another pattern,
without removing the old pattern.
Yeah,
which is nice.
And it's like, you know, like suddenly it's a bit like X-ray specs, isn't it? That you know, you brought the nature and brought that all alive. And, you know, maybe I brought that bit about sort of history of the landscape, the physical geography side and the geomorphology. Yeah, you put those two together and suddenly it's much more exciting than just going for a walk. You know, it's like you're in this kind of, you know, almost like in a space that's kind of really positive and energised that you might not, you know, just an ordinary walk on your own or whatever. Yeah.
So with that positive energy, I suppose the question then is, does it help
the landscape. If we're walking this landscape, if we're connected with nature and getting a positive feedback from it, do you think then it somehow in our society, in our culture even, does it enable us to be better equipped to deal with the issues of the conservation of climate change?
I don't know. I think I'm much more positive now than I was a couple of years ago. I'd often go for a walk and I'd get downhearted by the sort of industrial agriculture, the management, you know, the hedges not being looked after, the woodlands in, you know, undermanaged and kind of just kind of full of shooting paraphernalia but not really being managed in a healthy sort of way. And I sort of found that a bit downheartening, or disheartening is the word, isn't it? But I think, you know, our walks have made me really realise the possibilities and opportunities for change and the beginnings of change in terms of not only being personally more aware of the layers and the sort of health and state of those layers, but just seeing that there is joy in restoring. I think, isn't it, the braiding the sweet grass? That kind of... You know, restoring something is a positive thing, but you need to understand how it's constructed and what's healthy and what's not healthy and how you can help the two work together to bring an overall increase in health, I suppose.
I'm just thinking of one example that we shared on one of our walks was coming across a strange-looking fence, do you remember? And we thought, well, that's too low for deer.
And
it's by a river, and of course it was a beaver enclosure. Not a brand new species, an ancient species that's come back to this landscape and many other landscapes. And that, for me, was an example of what you're just saying, that, suddenly there was that's great. Isn't it great that there's beavers back in our landscape?
Yeah.
And then the positive... you know, role that beavers have in that ecosystem around the rivers. And then we could, you know, start to think about how all the knock-on effects of introducing, you know, reintroducing a species, of doing something positive has on us. We were excited that there's a badger back in that way.
And there's also that issue, isn't it? It's like seeing things. You're like, I now see a lot more things. I'm much more aware of birds, butterflies, and I see them. It's like really funny, isn't it? That sense of like, oh, all right, I'm really aware of swifts at the moment. I've, you know,
reading a book about
and
it.
I'm seeing swifts, and previously I was downhearted because I didn't see swifts, and I thought, oh, you know, this is a species under threat. It's declining numbers. It's being lost. There's a grieving for that loss, but actually, it's partly about observation and being aware and connected to nature. And you start to see an enrichment through just observation and awareness and being immersed in a landscape properly, you know.
I think you're right. I think you used the phrase that last spring, so we're going right back to 2020, was the most well-observed spring. In those days, we were probably just walking on our own. There wasn't even that much opportunity to walk with another person. And we all saw those gradual changes in nature through a season which happened to be very sunny, didn't it, and dry.
It was a good spring, but I think I reflect on it now and realise just how much time I spent in nature and how therapeutic and uplifting it was, and I want to carry that on now that lockdown's we're out of lockdown or into another phase. I don't want to lose that, you know. I want to hang on to that sense that if I'm in the landscape and I'm observing and I'm giving myself time, it's much more enriching than just going for a walk where I sort myself out, you know.
We're just enjoying, as we speak, a skylark is going pretty ballistic with its beautiful song and some swallows swooping down as well. So I love one of your other sort of metaphors, which has come up whilst we've been walking, is that whole thing of sort of almost nature curating itself.
A festival of nature
through the seasons. And then each thing has its moment, doesn't it? There is the swift moment, the skylark moment.
The black cap moment was, that was a great one, wasn't it? It was like, this is black cap week. We walked up Gage's Lane and there were six or seven giving it merry hell,
It was lovely, wasn't it?
And it just feels to me that as spring unfolds, there's almost like, this is chaffinch week, this is chiff chaff week, yeah. This is, you know.
And it is, you know, it's not the rarities or anything special that you haven't seen before. It's just, this is the most. I suppose the chiff chaff's a good example. Is that we are so excited when we hear the first chiff chaff, and there's almost a sort of like, oh, when is it going to happen? You know, anticipation. And then now, I mean, there's loads of chiff chaff still, isn't it? We don't really notice them. They're just in the background.
They're there, part of this, you know, like, what's it, that.
It's quite hard to talk when there's a skylark.
But it's like they've been added to the stage, aren't they? In a theatrical sense, it's like we start with a pretty empty stage with just a few things on there, and then we're adding these layers of interest. And I think Zach, me and Zach, my son, go out for evening walks, and you know, we kind of looked at our watches this week and said, oh, it's about time we went to Cogden and looked for the butterfly orchids. You know,
lovely.
You know, kind of. And off we went, and we tromped, and we just did a little circuit. And there they were, you know, coming into place on this stage of with the bee orchids and the kind of, you know, the early, I guess the small blues, are they? Or
common blues.
Common blues, that have emerged.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to the jigsaw piece, isn't it, as well? That not only are you aware of where you are in time and seasonality, which is amazing, but that you know that, you know, there's a spot to go at that time of year to see the butterfly orchids.
I guess it's quite interesting, isn't it? It kind of links to pilgrimages, doesn't it? That idea that, you know, and we always, it's a walk, you know. That idea you get in a car, get out of a car and you see something, it doesn't work for me, but that journey of walking to places, knowing there might be something interesting at that, or something to kind of respect or honour, or kind of, what's the great, it's that kind of gratefulness now.
Yeah,
what's
it? There is a mindfulness, is it?
What's that thanking word? Like, if you thank, gratefulness, yeah. I don't know. It's just being grateful for being able to make that walk to that place. And when you get there, there's something of real interest that lifts your spirits, and you see those butterfly orchids again, and you smell them, and you go, that's an amazing smell.
They're still here, and we're still
connected with them. And they're coming round, and it's that time of year.
And I suppose on top of that, I know when we've been walking, it's not being too expectant of any one thing in particular, but, you know, there's going to be something, you know.
Yeah.
If we don't see a swift today, there'll be something else that gives us joy, and maybe, you know, I don't know, a sparrowhawk flies by in front of us and we just relish that moment. So there's a lot to be grateful for.
And I guess for me, it's like almost like charging up yourself to sort of prepare yourself to take on board something on one of these walks. You know, it's like I've learned through lockdown of just, it's worth having a heightened awareness when you go out. You know, I'd maybe got to a point of thinking that it was all a bit lost and these things were disappearing from the landscape, but actually I feel now that they are there, and that we're turning a corner with managing and regenerative agriculture and rewilding are possibly going to turn the corner, and we'll start to build, and we'll see more and enrich our landscapes a bit more. So
well, that's good, because that's looking now at the future. So we've kind of dealt with how we're in the present moment, and maybe the lockdown helped us all to be in the present moment a bit more, and the seasonal moments that come through the year, and piecing together the landscape and the geography. But, you know, how do we look at this future? You've talked about sort of regenerative agriculture. You've talked about some positives in conservation. I mean, looking at this Dorset landscape, as beautiful as it is, it's probably got challenges.
But I think there's a sense, for me, there's a sense there's enough people now diverting their energies into thinking about the future landscapes for future generations, for our kids and their kids, that we can't carry on as we are. We've got to change the way we do agriculture. We've got to change the way we interact with nature. And that's, you know, partly driven from a decarbonising agenda, but I think nature and regenerative agriculture is a kind of almost a sort of spiritual connection on top of that, you know.
And I think that, for me, we quite often read books separately, but then come and talk about the books we've been reading. And for me, that was really echoed in James Rebanks's latest book. What's that called? English Pastoral, I think.
The English Pastoralist.
And he said, you know, he's a farmer through and through, and has farming generations going back into his family. But he said, we can't carry on. That's like you just said then, we can't carry on as farmers, we can't carry on doing what we've been doing to the detriment of wildlife and landscape and biodiversity. It has to change. It doesn't mean to say that, you know, we abandon everything, but it has to be the point at which some aspects of farming have to be more positive towards allowing nature.
And I think we're on a curve, and it's a curve that's starting to tip in the right direction. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. We're not going to see a kind of revolution in land management. We're starting to see a turning of the tide, and I think there's exciting regenerative agriculture projects, exciting rewilding schemes. You know, there's landowners that are really thinking big about trees and woodlands again, and so I think that's all very positive.
Can I ask you about that, just probably to finish, that I think that a lot of your energy at the moment and your professional as well as your passion is going into a Dorset woodland project. Just tell me a little bit about what's
so
that?
we set up an organization called Dorset Wood Hub, a social enterprise, and we've used that as a vehicle to try to get some funding and resources to try to make this kind of connection between materials that we can produce from the land. So things like fibers, you know, hemp is an amazing crop. It's good for turning away from industrial agriculture because it doesn't require fertilizers and pesticides, and it grows really well here in West Dorset. There's a history of flax and hemp growing around the rope and sail industry. So it's kind of restoring something that was here.
For good reason, presumably.
Yeah, it's the right sort of place, soil, it's the right sort of climate for that crop. But it's about, I think that, it's called Raise the Roof, the project that I'm working on at the moment. We've got 2 years funding. And the idea is to try to connect those locally grown natural materials of hemp and wood fibre through a kind of processing and fabrication to actually building houses. So that, you know, there's revolutions that have got to happen all over the place. Agriculture is one place, but also how we build and construct homes and buildings. So Bridport, you know, over the next 10 years, there's going to be 1,000 new homes. We can't build them in the same way that we've been building for the last 20 years, you know, with concrete and brick and block. It has to be a different material that embeds carbon, locks carbon away. And that's what we want to try to make that connection between growing natural materials, managing the woodlands to produce wood fibre, and turning that into the building blocks of affordable housing. And there's a great need for social rent for affordable housing in Bridport. And we want to try and make that connection between the two. And it's the beginnings of a new economy, if you want to see it like that, because the skills and jobs that would be linked to that are things that, you know, can easily be picked up and developed by young people. So, you know, that idea of a young people's economy doing modern methods of construction using natural materials is so exciting. You know,
God, I'm getting excited now.
Let's do it.
Just something that popped into my head, though, I think just at the end there, is about accessibility. So we're lucky, aren't we, that we, A, live in a place where we can walk from the door. And you've walked from Burton Bradstock, and I've walked from Bridport, and we've met in the middle on a lovely rolling hill, and we can see the sea, and there's lots of nature that's, you know, happening around us. But, you know, not everyone has either access in terms of they don't live quite in the same spots, or they don't have the cultural, what's the word? You know, they're not used to necessarily going out and walking in nature. You know? How do we encourage, you know, everybody to have, you know, this sort of experience?
It's been the challenge for the whole of my career in conservation. How do you get more people engaged and involved? And I think you start with the individual, start with the gardens, start with the local environment, you know, kind of, you know, people do care about where they live and what surrounds them, and they're coming at it. And it's kind of building from where people are rather than expecting them to make that giant leap into being really knowledgeable and fit and keen to get out. It's kind of start with where they are and help them. So one of the things that we want to try to do through Raise the Roof is kind of, you know, volunteer groups going out planting trees and managing woodlands and hedgerows, and just making, you know, those easy connections, hopefully, that lead on to other things.
I suppose there is lots of opportunities for volunteering, isn't there, that people can get involved practically, perhaps pick up skills.
Yeah,
And go on from there. Yeah.
I mean, I started way back, you know, back in the 80s with what was then the British. I am that. I fully realise it.
A long history.
Conservation volunteers, you know, and I think that was, for me, a big motivator at the time was, you know, there was lots of unemployed young people. Mm. And going out, we called it our midweek volunteer group, and we'd pick people up in a van in the middle of Bristol, and we'd go off and do conservation projects around the old county of Avon. Mm. And lots of those people, you know, that you know, just connecting for a couple of months with that project led to them getting more involved and getting jobs and moving on into careers in that whole field. And I think that you're just making it easy for people to make those first steps. Is really important.
That's a really good, another way back to another metaphor, but just making those first steps. And
yeah, you see what I did there?
I brought it all back full circle. We're piecing together the jigsaw of the landscape and we're taking our first steps. So we're going to wrap it up here, and I just want to say thank you. That has been really good to just hear your voice and talk through some of the ideas of our walks together and your steps through your professional work as well. Yeah. So it's a lovely day. We should go for a walk, shouldn't we?
I think we can head off around that way, can't we? And
we'll see. It might even be a pint at the end to tell a story.
to share. Share exactly. A story with others. Nice, thanks.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Martin.
No, it's a pleasure.
So I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation as we walked in the areas between Burton, Bradstock and Bridport. And we would really love to hear some of your conversations and stories about particular places within the Dorset AOMB that you love, places that you go to when you want to get away from it all, places that you've been on family holidays, places that you've worked and got to know very slowly over the years, any stories that you have about particular landmarks or even times of the year, things that you look out for in nature as the cycle of the seasons goes around. Please do get in touch with Talking Tent and tell us some of your stories and your memories and your anecdotes and your favourite things about being in this wonderful county of Dorset. So thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to catching up with you again.